Hello, Mark.
Hey, David, how are you?
I'm great. I'm talking to Mark Clayton Suthers today, who is among has two titles, actually, the Artistic Director of Theater Initiatives at the August Wilson Center for African American Culture in Pittsburgh, but also a longtime founder and Artistic Director of the Pittsburgh Playwrights Theater Company. Yes?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
All right. So we're doing this week that's focused on Pittsburgh and the new play activity in Pittsburgh. And how long have you been in this community?
Oh, my whole life I've been in Pittsburgh. I'm a Pittsburgher. I left for a year and worked as a photographer in the Virgin Islands for about a year, and I worked at a car wash in Detroit back in the late 70s for about a year. But other than that, I've been in Pittsburgh my whole life. Oh, I went to Tuskegee Institute for a little while.
How did you come to theater, Mark? What were the doors that opened for you? What were the the ahas for you that this is where you were going?
Well, I in grade school we used to do little skits and write little skits and stuff. And from that point on, I really got into sports. And I was asked to do a play in high school, but I opted to play baseball instead. And I started doing photography. So I was a photographer for the Pittsburgh Choir for many years, and I was also a photographer for the Country Repertory Theater. And it wasn't until the ripe old age of 30, I believe, that I I was watching Marlene's Black Bottom, and I was videotaping it for the theater company. And I was sitting in the back row, probably on my bag phone, because they had bag phones back then, and Levy started cussing God out, and I stopped and like, what the heck? And it made me sit up and pay attention, and because you're not supposed to do that. You're not supposed to cuss God. I don't think you're supposed to be cussing God out anywhere. But and it was the first time that I really felt moved by a theater, and then a few years later I was asked to help fill in for an actor as a reader for a new play by Rob Penny called Among the Best. And I ended up getting cast as Buck Leonard. And so that's how I got in theater at the ripe old age of around 30. And I started doing plays with Kuntu and did some stuff at New Horizon Theater. Then I went to South Africa in 1998 to perform one of Javon Johnson's plays, along with Derek Sanders, who founded the Congo Square Theater in Chicago. We went down to do one of Javon Johnson's plays in the Grahamstown Arts Festival. And when we first got there, we were staying in an all-girls dorm, of all places. And we opened up the local paper, and it said August Wilson is teaching a master class in playwriting. And we jetted out of the building and ran down this long hill. We got to the bottom of the hill, and this guy says, "You want to ride up to the college," which is the top of the hill. We rode up, turned up to be a South African jitney. We gave him like R2. And we went in, and August was there teaching this master class in playwriting. There was probably about 200 people in the room. And it was packed, and two people got up and left in the front row, and Derek and I ran up there and sat in the front row. And afterwards, we started talking with August and, telling him we were from Pittsburgh, and we developed a great relationship. And later that summer, we attended the Edward Albee Theater Festival in Valdez, Alaska, and performed alongside August in six of his plays and readings with Delroy Lindell and Ella Joyce. So it was a great beginning to a great relationship. That's how I really got, knee-deep into it.
Do you think you would have come to playwriting yourself if it had not been for your introduction to Wilson, both as an artist and the person?
Oh, no. I mean, to be honest with you, I was really inspired by the work of Rob Penny. Rob's work, because Rob does a lot of teaching in his plays, and by acting with Kuntu, I really, got sucked in. But being around August, just like, the way I see it is, it's like probably a Caucasian playwright saying that he was hanging out with William Shakespeare. I mean, this just was a great feeling that, I don't see happening again in my lifetime. So I writing plays myself, I hate to say it, but, I don't see anyone reaching the plateau that August reached, and I don't take that as a setback at all. It's just the reality is that he devoted himself to playwriting, and that's why his plays are just so rich and so good. You have to, you have to make that sacrifice, you know.
Mm-hmm. It must have been something for you to watch the August Wilson Center get built and then come into your life, both professionally just as an artist in the community and then become somewhat your responsibility in the theater side of things. That must have been a kind of surprise in your...
It was a surprise how it all went about. You know, I was working in a steel mill at the time, and I was there for 18 and a half years, and I would write in the bathrooms, you know, on my... Mm-hmm. I actually wrote a play on my iPhone, you know, because, you know, it's like the stormtroopers in Star Wars, you know, the guards in the mill, you know, the armed guards come around, you know, and you're going to act like you're working or doing something, you know. So it was actually good artistically to be in a really racist place, a routine type place where, you know, everybody took showers together at the end of the day. It was just, for a playwright, it was a great experience to see all these different cultures, although we're all Americans, but, you know, the Irish and the Italians and the Polish folks, you know, talking about each other. Well, growing up, it was just black and white for me, you know what I mean? So
uh-huh.
It was a great experience to be in that, the way writing, you know, to do writing and stuff. But coming to the center, you know, I actually applied for a job at the Jubilee Theater, artistic director job in Texas, in Fort Worth, Texas, and I was one of three finalists, and I was told by several board members and the managing director that, you know, basically I was going to be the one to get the job. So, you know, I felt pretty good because I wanted to move out of the city. I wanted to do something different. And I went to the mill, and I said, I'm going to give them a two-week notice. And as the day wore on, it turned into a week notice. And by the end of the day, I just went out and signed. My papers didn't come back, so I quit. Anticipating getting this job, and then when I found out I didn't get it, a good friend of mine actually got it. Found out I didn't get it, I was like, oh boy, wow, okay now. You know, that's the wake up call. And I was offered the job here the same day, same exact day. So that was a relief. And just coming into the center, you know, it's just that, you know, the center is not really designed for a theater program. It's going to be a while to really get it to where it needs to be. And getting the proper funding in place, getting the staff to understand the importance of theater and what it takes to run a theater. You know, you just can't have one little office and expect to do theater. You need a staff, you know. But we're working there. Hopefully we'll get there soon. It's a wonderful facility, and there's a lot of great folks working here. It's just the funding is key. You know that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. You, and all through this time, you've been managing basically the Pittsburgh Playwrights as well.
Right.
And you've had your job at the mill.
Yes. Which paid for the playwrights.
Yeah.
So don't tell my wife that. Yeah.
Let me ask you this about Pittsburgh. It just more like the ecology of it. Is that kind of typical that these companies the size of Pittsburgh Playwrights, they're not full time gigs for people? They aren't that size yet. People are putting their lives together, involving other ways of earning money.
Yeah, I mean, it's really a celebration of our artistic community. You know, no one, we're in our ninth season, no one, including us, no one gets a salary. You know, it's per show. We do pretty good with the funders for our level. You know, we've never really tried to go past a budget of $150,000 a year, you know, but we make it work on that budget, you know. We do a full season of three plays plus a festival that I've started called the Theater Festival Black and White. So it's really a mixture of amateur, you know, community and professional. We've actually bring in professional actors, and you know, Anthony Chisholm has worked with us, Eugene Lee has worked with us. Stephen McKinley Henderson is coming and done some stuff. It's a mixture of folks that make it work, and it's a really good ground for local actors to get a chance to work beside seasoned Wilsonian actors and veterans. So it's a good mix. You know, our festival, we give directors the first time opportunity to direct plays, one act plays, And it's just a great rush. I know the rush that I got when I had my first play produced at ETA Theater in Chicago, you know, with Abner Brown and Renacco Jahi produced it. It was just a great feeling to see people come in and see your work, and I wanted to replicate that here in the city. So I took a home equity loan out of my house and bought this guy out in his theater, and he was shutting it down. And I paid way too much for it, but it was turnkey. We were able to go in there and do work right away. And, the first play we did was Christmas is Coming Uptown, which isn't written by Pittsburgh playwrights, but it was the first thing we did in that space. But our first production we did for the Pittsburgh playwrights was August Wilson's Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. And August actually came to see it, you know, and it was a success. Eileen Morris directed it. At the time, she was the managing director for the Country Repertory Theater. She came and directed it, and we were on our way to producing his work, and he's been the cornerstone of our seasons, you know, yeah. Along with George Kaufman. We did a lot of George Kaufman stuff.
Let me go in there for just a second. What did that feel like? You're producing your first play in your space, and August Wilson comes and sees it.
Well, I mean, it was great for the actors. Of course, I wanted to make sure everything was just right. And one of the things, one of the
some pressure.
August pulled me aside and said, "Hey man, hey man, you don't have my bio in the program." And I'm like, I'm just sunk. You know, it's like, remember when Fred Flintstone was taking ballet lessons and all his buddies were watching him through the garage door? Turned like an ant hall and ran out the room. That's how I felt like, you know, Fred Flintstone with a tutu on. But the young lady who did the programs was right there, so I called her over and introduced her to him, and she took the heat. So, but, it was an experience. I mean, you know, it. Those are the type of things that make you stronger, you know. I mean, he wasn't mad. He just was, he's like, "Hey, okay, I appreciate you doing it, but give me a little play here now, you know." But it was cool.
First, did he ever see any of the rest of the work? You guys, you Pittsburgh Playwrights, did you done them all? Did you do all 10?
We're up to number 9. We're in our 9th season. We've done them in the order in which they were produced in New York.
Okay, so you're on to what?
We're on Jiminy Ocean right now. Yeah, with the exception of Jitney, because Jitney went through a rewrite process and was reintroduced. So we'll finish the cycle next season with Radio Golf.
Radio Golf.
But August.
So Jem just opened.
Last weekend, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Congratulations. I cut you off. You go ahead. Sorry.
Okay. Now I was just saying he was funny because he stayed and he talked with all the actors and you know one of the things when Toledo dies, our actor that plays Toledo. Like did this elongated death, and he made sure he rolled over to right where August was sitting, and looked up at him like, "I'm dying for you, August." You know, it was hilarious. You had to see it, but it was a really good production. And I asked August afterwards. I said, "August, how do we get our community into this space? Because you know, not a lot of African Americans come out to see August's work like we would hope for." And you know, and he says, you know. Him and Rob used to do plays at a place in Hazelwood. He said, we did a play one time. We wrote a play together called Superfly, based on a movie. And he said, everybody came out. Everybody and their mother came out. And then we would pass out flyers and say, "Hey, come back and see this play. Come back and see this play." Because you have to really tap into the community. And it's a tough nut to crack, you know what I mean? You know, Tyler Perry certainly has done it, you know. And, you know, folks have different ideas and opinions about, you know, the work for what, you know, what it is. But, you know, our community is our community, and we have to find new ways to usher them into coming in to see August Wilson plays.
Yeah. So is Tyler Perry have a following in Pittsburgh?
I think he has a following everywhere he goes, you know.
Yeah. I didn't know. Yeah. He is programming in Pittsburgh.
He's done some stuff here, yes, yeah. He does pretty well, yeah.
It's really interesting to try to make that bridge, isn't it? He has such a brand, and he has such a style, not just the brand actually delivers on the style and vice versa, and how to build a bridge from the kind of energy and interest that he's able to generate to broader aesthetics.
I went through this whole metamorphosis. We'll call it the Tyler Perry metamorphosis. And I think you have to really have an appreciation for art, for whatever, however it comes at you. And I think that we put too much emphasis on what's theater and trying to label theater. And that's where the problem comes in. We try to label theater. I mean, I don't see any, I've never heard of white theater before, you know, but we know that it exists, you know what I mean? I think we worry about it and we talk about it too much and we beat it to death. And people go see what they want to see, and that's what folks have to realize. They're going to go see what they want to see. And it's not about the ticket price. We get wrapped up in thinking it's the ticket price. It's not the ticket price. People spend money for what they want to see. People say, okay, well, you know, if we charge more than $20, people won't come. Well, you know, if they want to come, they're going to come. You know, people are paying $60 to see plays, $90 to see plays, you know what I mean? Kenny Leon, they did very well with the reading series down in D.C., and the ticket was the readings, and the tickets were what they were. You know, you had a lot of named people in them, but they were what they were. The ticket prices were, you know, as if you were going to a production. So people will support what they want to see. I think we get caught up so much in trying to replicate other people's successes and trying to do things, and I'm not getting stressed anymore about ticket sales or, you know, I do want our community to be exposed to August Wilson. I do want to see more of our community folks in there, and there's just have to find ways to get them in there. You know, the quick fix is to have somebody in there with a name. I mean, that's the real quick fix for it. But you know, sometimes budget wise, that's not necessary. You know, so I mean, it's going to be an ongoing discussion.
Certainly you guys have done kept August Wilson's work alive in the community. Has his presence in that community, both as an artist and as a Native son, has that impacted more broadly? Obviously, it's shaped your life, but has it impacted more broadly on Pittsburgh in the theater or art world?
Yeah. You know, he left us too soon. You know, he left us soon.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know what the politics are. You know, I've heard stories about movie deals and Eddie Murphy, and I've heard all these stories. I think the culture, the world in which we live in is, you know, it's film. And I know that had it happened, you know, we would have seen more of him on, you know, talk show interviews or whatever. But I think what's important to understand is that his work is going to be around forever, 400 years from now, 500 years, 600 years from now. Unless that big meteor comes, they're going to be doing August's work, and it's just going to last the test of time. I mean, and there's not a competition with anybody coming up or whatever. I just think that, you know, just like Shakespeare stuff is being done, August is going to be being done. So I'm really so happy that he completed his cycle, that he succeeded what he planned to do, and I just. Of course, you know, we know that he had an abundance of material, you know, out there, you know, about the, you know, things that he was going to work on. But he left us too soon. But he left us a wonderful gift. You know, left us a wonderful gift, and it's going to keep people working, excited, learning about our history, our culture through his work for years to come. So I'm really pleased to be involved with. As far as the impact it's had on a national level, certainly on the theater scene. I was at the airport one day. I was going to direct Jiminy Ocean up in Dayton, and I was at the airport, and there was a guy sitting next to me on his laptop, and he saw some stuff I had with Jiminy. He said, August Wilson, who's that? And I explained to him who August Wilson was, and he went online and Googled him, and he must have asked me 25 questions about August Wilson. A lot of folks haven't been exposed to him. You know, a lot of African Americans don't go to the theater, don't have season subscriptions. Their parents didn't take them for various reasons. We know all the different reasons. We don't have that lineage of going to the theater, you know, knowing about etiquette and all those different things. I didn't have it, you know. It's something I learned at a late age, you know. So it's going to continue to be a growing thing for us. You know, certainly if August Wilson was, you know, not African American, he probably would be celebrated a lot differently, you know, throughout the world. But he's the man, you know, and I'm glad to be able to have been exposed to him.
Yeah. So you're I have two questions for you. I'm going to ask the first one. Are you still able to write in the time that you have left? So you're running this theater. You're trying to build this program over to the August Wilson Center, and you're directing. Are you still writing plays?
Well, you know, my wife and I were talking about this morning, you know, about being more selfish. I hate to say it like that, but to actually take the time out to work on your own stuff. And Andre Guest, the CEO here, just was telling me the other day as well, you know, you got to get back into your writing, you know. I haven't written anything for about 3 years. I have some stuff I started on, and I'm not disappointed about it. I don't have writer's block. I just think that I have to stay focused on the projects that I want so they can be the best they can be. You know, I'm not in that routine environment like I was at the steel mill, where I know every day from 11 to 12 I could take my lunch and go write, you know, or on night shift I could take 2 hours and write, you know what I mean? So I haven't taken that time to set that time aside because I'm working on projects now that really depend on my survival. I don't have the income at the steel mill anymore, which was a great income.
Yep.
I have to make sure that the stuff that I am working on is the best it can be because, you know, there's no excuse, you know what I mean? So I haven't taken the time out to write. Do I miss it? I miss the solitude. I miss the exploration. But I also am willing to set it aside right now so that I can produce other playwrights' plays and build our theater company up and also build up the center's ideas about theater.
You know, I had the great benefit more than 10 years ago now of working with a kind of a personal coach, a person who had been involved with the organization I was running at the time, and she convinced me that it was important for me to have a personal mission statement. And so, you know, I kind of went through this process with her and came up with a statement that's true today. I use it all the time, that what I am doing, what I exist to do, you put it in these big terms, is to create the environment, the circumstances, and resources for artists to succeed, mm-hmm. and for theater artists to succeed. And so in a way, because I've done a lot of what you're confronting right now, where my primary role as an artist is in directing work and most often in new work, but for the last number of years, my focus has really been on building environments. So I was building this big program at Arena while we built this big building at Arena Stage, and then now I'm here at Arts Emerson. It's a new program, big ambition, and I find it a very creative act. I find it very much on point, and it does it keeps intruding on my opportunity as an artist for myself, but it seems right in line with who I am as a person and what I mean to leave in the world. So I can kind of not get not get anxious about it, not strain against what is right in front of me. It sounds like you're having the same journey in the sense that what you've got on your plate is exciting, needs you, and expresses you differently than your writing does, but still is you.
You can't escape it. I mean, you know, theater is my other woman. I cheat on my wife with theater, you know, and I just
now
realized
remember
that,
this is on this. I'm putting that right out on the website there, Mister. You better talk to her about it.
She knows who the other woman is. You know, she was down the other day. She was at the theater the other day for opening night, and I was just getting like she, you know, she was helping. We were getting set up, and I'm like getting irritated and stuff. And I'm like, you know, it was opening night. A lot of people were coming in, and I'm saying to myself, why am I so irritated? Like, oh, you know, she's invading on the privacy of me and my woman on the set. You know, so sometimes you got to step back and look at things. You know, I just turned 50. And I have a 4-year-old son, I have an 18-year-old daughter, and I have a 1-year-old son, yes.
Oh, my
so,
God.
Yeah. So it's, life is, it's great. It's really great to, because I have to step back. I look at my father, I love my father to death, and I never did anything artistic around him. We were cutting trees down, fishing, hunting, shooting little rabbits and stuff. And I never, the week after he died, I started writing poetry. And Javon Johnson said, "Oh, man, actually, I wrote a letter to my brother." And Javon Johnson, the playwright, said, "Oh, man, that's a nice poem." I said, "That's not a poem. That's a letter to my brother." He said, "That's a nice poem." So I started writing poetry. Said, this is in 1998. We were doing Blues for Alabama Sky. He was playing Guy. No, I'm sorry. He was playing Guy, and I was playing Doc and for Country Repertory Theater. And we had a really great relationship, and he really got me into playwriting. You know, so it's a mixture of Javon Johnson, Rob Penny, August Wilson, and Dr. Vernon Lilly. So I started writing, but my dad passed in 1998, you know, right while we were in rehearsals for the Blues from Alabama Sky, and I wrote this letter. And I started writing after my dad passed. And it's not that, you know, he didn't want me to be expressive. It's just that I felt that it wasn't the manly thing to do, you know, that I need to go cut a tree down or some stuff. And I found out many years later, my mother told me that my dad wrote a play, which we can't find it. We haven't found it, but she told me I never knew that. And I would have, because he taught me photography at a young age, like at 10, you know. And I never knew that he was a writer, you know. And she told me that he had a little typewriter and all that stuff. So it was just a great feeling, but it was after he was gone, you know. So, I mean, you know, it's you have to carve out the time to do the stuff. But I don't miss, I've written 10 plays. I've written 6 one-act plays. I've had just about all of them produced because I produce most of them myself, you know. I just had a production up in New Jersey. I went and saw a college did a play, a man called Mom Noah, that won the Theater Award Prize back in 2004. And they did a really great job. Woody King's talking about producing off-Broadway. He's still fundraising for that. But I look at folks like Woody King, you know, these iconic theater figures, and I know that Woody has made sacrifices to do the stuff that he does. So I don't mind making the sacrifices. And I look at Eugene Lee, who runs a theater conference out in Texas, and these are folks that are artists that are doing stuff on the national level, performing on Broadway, but they're also doing things to help assist playwrights. One thing August told me, I started this reading roundtable. When we were in Alaska, I was so excited. You know, it's like you want to say, "Oh, I wish my boys can be here. I wish my friends can see this." You know, I'm up here. I'm on stage with August Wilson. He's reading with us. You know, and Delroy Lindo. You know, and I'm excited because I just, you know, I'm a steel mill worker. You know, how the heck did I get here? And I'm excited. So I go up to Delroy Lindo. I said, "Delroy, can you do a video that I could take home and show our local theater folks and talk about the importance?" August, nah, man. After the awards ceremony, someone tapped me on my shoulder. I turned around, it was Delroy Lindo. He said, "Hey, man, come on, let's go do that video." So I took my big, giant, one of them VHS camcorders back in the back room, and I videotaped him. He talked for about 7 minutes about the importance of knowing August Wilson's work. And I took it back home, and I started this reading roundtable in my house on Mondays, the first Monday of each month. And Dina Levitin would send me scripts from Seattle, August's assistant. She would send me all the scripts I needed. And we did a reading roundtable of his plays. August called me one day. He said, "Hey, man, you going to be reading tonight?" I said, yeah. He said, "Okay, I'm in town. I want to, is it okay if I come up and read?" I said, "Yeah." We were reading Jitney. He caught a Jitney up to my house. I live up in the hill. He came up and came in. I had actors there that were shocked, you know. And we had Turnbow, and it was funny as hell, man. I'm sorry. I don't know if anyone ever heard him read. I mean, he has these characters down to the T. And I kind of put him on the spot afterwards. I asked him, could he do a poem? And he did a poem that he wrote about the house across from me grew up. It was a house of prostitution, I guess, whatever. And it was such an elegant poem, man. And I wish I could have recorded it, whatever. He stuck around, took pictures of everybody, hung out, smoked cigarettes on the front porch with some actors. And it just was a great experience, you know. And it just was wonderful. So we did this reading roundtable to expose the local actors to his work, because a lot of actors never get a chance locally to do his work. They always, you know, if they bring a director in from Denver, he'll bring his people in, you know, at the local, his regional level. So it was a great exposure for him, you know, and to have August there was just wonderful.
Yeah. Well, a lot of those actors who you know, would come in to do those jobs never had the opportunity to sit with August Wilson. So
yeah.
That's a benefit. Wow, that's such richness for you and for the local community from him. Such generosity too. I mean, it seems like
he's
really at home with you.
Oh yeah, he was a very generous individual. You know, that's what I was getting at. He said to me, "Hey man, don't just read my plays, read other people's plays," which was major to hear him say that. That was major because he really cares. He really cared about the local, you know, not local, about the black playwright, you know.
Yeah.
And so we started the reading roundtable here at the center first Monday of each month. And I alternated. We read August Wilson play, and then the following month we'll read another playwright from the national level. We're reading one of Eugene Lee's plays in August called Lion Ass. Lion Ass. It's called Lion Ass.
Okay.
So Eugene's going to come in. We just...
tell him I said hello when you see him.
I will.
He's a sweet man.
Every Tongue Confess, we just produced his play here. He came in to see it. And we had...
You staged Every Tongue?
Oh, yeah. Trey Garrett came in, the guy who got the job in Texas that I didn't get. I brought Trey in to direct it. He did a marvelous job with it, you know.
I was involved in the opening production of that play at Arena, and Eugene Lee was in it.
Yeah, I know. He's the one that got me hot on the play. Yeah.
Great.
Marcus came in. We brought him in. And then Anthony Chisholm went and saw it and called me up and was telling me about it as well. You know, Chisholm's a good friend. But, we brought in Sam Mark Williams, you know, did his play. We premiered the piece, and he was called Last in the Line, you know, with Monte Russell in the lead. You know, Monte's a Pittsburgher. You know, he's out. He's doing Jitney right now. They're out on the West Coast doing Jitney. Ron O.J. Parsons directed it with Mark Masherson out there at the new rep out there. And it's moving to Pasadena Playhouse. It's going to go there now. And a good friend of mine is in it. Monte's in it. Also, a guy named Rolando, he's a commercial actor. There's a lot of commercials, but he was in my first play at ETA, When the Water Turns Clear. And he's out there now. He's doing Jitney out there at the Pasadena Playhouse. So,
what other writers are you most excited about?
Well, you know, I've been trying to do a Walter Mosley piece here, and he's on the radar. We just got to get our funding together, man. It's just tough, man, to really stage it the way it needs to be staged. You know, there's a playwright in town now named Edwin Lee Gibson. He's an actor. He's an Obie Award-winning actor. He just came in Pittsburgh and did Jesus Hop the A-Train with Derek Sanders, directed it for Bare Bones Production. He's in town now. He's actually helping me out to playwrights. He's going to be teaching some classes here at the center. And he has a new piece called 5-2 that he's working on. I don't know if I should be able to talk about it, but it's going to be at the public in New York. They're working on a reading for the public, and we're going to try to help him develop it here as well.
Uh-huh. Wow, there's a lot going on in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, well, you know.
I knew you were there, and I knew the August Wilson Center was there. I knew the Pittsburgh Playwrights was there. But this whole week is—it's just really great to see this community.
There's a lot of. I mean, Pittsburgh is a livable city as far as wage-wise. You know, people can. You know, it doesn't take a lot of money to live here, and it's close to a lot of major areas. So it's a good place to, you know, snuggle up and then go out and do some stuff, but. It's a great theater scene. We have the Pittsburgh Cultural Trust, who is really supportive of a lot of small theaters in town. They try to, you know, our space is in their building now. We just moved into their building. Bricolage Theater is on the first floor, run by Jeff and Tammy, Jeffrey Carpenter and Tammy Dixon. I just directed The Dutchman for them last month. And it's just a nice little... We're trying to start a little theater row here on Liberty Avenue, and the Trust has been very supportive. There's no-name players, Don DiGiulio and Tresha Glover, to do really great work. A good friend of mine just started a company called 12 Piers Theater that are doing readings right now. there's just a lot of artists here. There's a lot of professional artists. There's a lot of schools here. One of the things we need to switch off onto now is getting the management side firmed up. You know, there's a lot of people getting their degrees in management and moving to other cities who really can use some of those folks here. It's really tough to get management, you know, theater management, you know.
Well, very interesting. That we'll leave that out there. For people who are listening to this call, there's an opportunity there in Pittsburgh for people who are managers to come make a difference in a community. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Well, Mark, we could talk for hours. I have so many questions, but this is sort of the length of these calls. So good luck with all of what's happening. I keep an eye on what's going on with the August Wilson Center. I know it's been, it's been finding its legs and it keeps evolving, and it's such an important institution. And thank you for continuing to work at that.
Yeah, we're trying to get the festival together. We want to do an August Wilson Festival. It's just a matter of getting all the key people in place to make it happen, you know. But one of the things that I'm going to start here for next season, hopefully, is that we're going to do I like to do this cycle with high school students, with a college director, a college, someone who's studying directing for one of the institutions locally, to direct an all-student production, you know, maybe in February before they really get into their high school plays. So we plan on doing probably Radio Golf or either Joe Turner's Come and Gone next season. In the process of making that, getting that set up, you know, I'm still speaking with several principals, you know, and the folks in the schools just to make sure it doesn't upset their boat and how they do things, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, good. Thank you for your time, and I know it's a busy day for you, so I really appreciate you squeezing us in.
Thanks for having me, Dave. I appreciate it.
Okay. Good luck to you.
All right.